Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, you'll meet Bill Carey. He's the owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair. Bill and his family have been doing business in Detroit for more than 40 years. We'll also introduce you to Father John Phelps. He's the founder of Life Directions. He's made it his life's work to help others. And a much-anticipated spring tradition is here. It's Flower Day at the Eastern Market. Katie Trudeau, the president and CEO, will tell us all about it. And we'll also learn more about a fascinating conference that took place in Detroit this month. John Gutierrez, executive director of the Michigan Office of Defense and Aerospace Innovation, will be by to explain exactly what this is. A great show about what's happening in and around the D right after these messages. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas. We kick off today's show with Bill Carey. He's the owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair. This is a business that's been operating in Detroit since 1985. Bill, welcome into Opportunity Detroit.
Ann, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Tell us a little bit about how this business got started.
So, in long story short, my dad and my uncle started in 1985. They worked at a competing Detroit truck repair here in Detroit, and they decided they wanted to be entrepreneurs and go out and work for themselves. And they came to the historic Ira Wilson Dairy Building and rented what previously was the horse and buggy garage.
Wow.
Back from the early 1900s. And, you know, started the two of them and recruited their younger brother, Dan, into the mix. And, you know, away they went and really had a strong reputation from where they worked previously and, you know, started to bring over some customers and, you know, slowly grew into a fleet-only repair facility here and mainly just serving Detroit businesses.
Oh, that's so interesting. Now, where is the Ira Wilson Dairy Building?
So if you've ever driven the 94-96 interchange, you can't miss us. There's a big, tall smokestack out front, and typically there are 50 to 100 trucks parked out in front, right along the corner of the freeway there.
Now, when you say fleet-only business, explain to our listeners what that means, Bill.
So we pride ourselves in taking care of entrepreneurial companies, right? The majority of our core business is fleets-only. So anybody who owns 1 to 1,000 trucks. And we really take a lot of pride in being a bumper-to-bumper, roof-to-tires company so that we are one throat to choke for, you know, small businesses that don't have the time or energy to really focus on everything on their moving assets. And they need to be focused on, you know, what makes them money and how they operate. So the majority of our customers, we do every single thing they need done to their entire fleet. We do maintenance programs and we manage the maintenance of the vehicles. We communicate with the drivers. You know, we're really part of, you know, their organization. And over the last 40 plus years, we've built a great reputation to be, you know, honest and transparent and trustworthy to be able to handle, you know, a lot of their assets and a lot of their expenses, right?
Bill, go way back and explain how the family even got interested in learning how to repair trucks. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So we, my dad's family grew up in Dearborn.
Okay.
And Divine Child was around the corner. And my grandfather said he'll pay for the girls to go to Divine Child, but the boys are on their own. So they had to work. They had to find a job to work through paying their own tuition. And, you know, my dad started driving a tow truck at age 16. And, you know, his older brother had a job at Muscat Tire, which is where they worked. And they learned how to fix trucks. And they were, you know, motorheads and working on cars. And really, they focused on trucks and never left the business, right?
Sure. I would imagine, Bill, that fixing trucks 40 years ago was a lot different than it is today with everything being computerized and all this high-tech stuff going into cars and trucks?
Oh, it's astonishing, right? You used to be able to diagnose trucks by listening to them or feeling them and manual gauges and ways of doing things. And now, you know, there's thousands of sensors and computer chips on every vehicle, and it's required us to really spend a lot of time, energy, and money in evolving to have all of the state-of-the-art softwares and sending guys for training and really hiring guys with specific trainings that, we didn't have as an organization has helped us, you know, grow and develop more people.
The other part of this story that is so interesting to me is that you've been doing business in the city for more than 40 years, and oh my, you have seen a lot of change. Talk about that.
Yeah, so I'm 39 years old, and coming down here as a child, you know, the neighborhood had houses everywhere, right?
Sure.
And there was a lot of crime, and we would get broken into all the time. And since then, just even looking at the change in the neighborhood, right? I remember being a kid and the ice cream truck showing up, coming down the street, and my dad would tell me to get on my bike and ride up and down the streets and tell all the kids to come get an ice cream on him, you know, and it's really, really changed, you know, the outlook of the neighborhood, because most of the houses are gone on our street. There's only one house left. So to see the change in that has been crazy. And the change in Detroit, you know, a majority of our growth has been growing with our customers. And, you know, our customers that previously back in the 90s had 10 trucks now have 100, right? And, you know, it's been great to see, and it's been great to be a part of. You know, we pride ourselves on helping our customers grow.
So you guys are entrepreneurs, obviously. What have been the highs, first of all, and then we can talk a little bit about the lows of running a business in the city of Detroit, Bill Carey?
So the highs are really, you know, our core values are family, right? Like family and growth, and being able to provide an opportunity for a lot of young people to come in with very little experience in our space and teach them how to make a really good living. So like we have, you know, great parties, and we have a really solid culture that we focus on here. But, you know, when I hear a guy just bought a house or had a baby and got married and took a great vacation or bought a new car, it's like those are why we come in every day to see our people grow, right? We've got just over 100 employees now.
Wow.
And a lot of them have been with us for a very long time.
What about the challenges? What would you say have been some of the biggest challenges along the way that you faced and you survived?
Technicians are very, very hard to come by.
Okay.
And, you know, we really, for a long time, had to tell people we can't service them, right? We would have customers that would be great customers come and say, hey, you know, I got a recommendation from, you know, one of your other customers. You guys do a great job. We want to bring you our trucks. And it would kill me to have to say over and over again, I'm so sorry, I can't bring you in. We're at capacity, and we have all these customers that we've taken care of for so long that I can't tell them I couldn't fix their truck because I have yours here. And that was really challenging because we were limited on space, and we were limited by the amount of technicians we had. So we really spent a lot of energy expanding inside of the building we were in and getting really creative, because as you can imagine, a horse and buggy garage is not designed for a 14-foot truck. So we've had to do a lot of capital improvements and, you know, keep developing the space and hiring and training technicians. So we spent a lot of time and energy training people to do it our way.
And we're talking to Bill Carey. He's the owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair. Bill, do you have opportunities for people that might be interested in doing this kind of work right now?
Oh, man, come one, come all, right? if you could fit our culture and, you know, have integrity and are reliable, we will take any and all people and, and train them to do a job and build a trade and develop some really great skills and make some really good friends along the way.
Oh, that's good to know. And how would people get in touch with you, Bill?
On our website, carrybros.com, there is a request more information link, and you can say you're looking for your truck to get fixed, or you want a job, or you want to get information for when we host a barbecue and come get a free hamburger and hot dog.
I love it. What kind of advice, finally, do you have for entrepreneurs that might be interested in getting into a business in the city of Detroit, Bill?
Do what you say you're going to do when you say you're going to do it. That is kind of our lifeline here. And you're going to get knocked down over and over and over again and be very, very resilient to keep fighting along.
Bill Carey, owner of Carey Brothers Truck Repair. It was nice to meet you. Thank you for your time today.
Oh, Anna, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, we'll introduce you to a Detroit priest who's doing amazing work in this community. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit, and we now say hello to Father John Phelps. He is the president and CEO of Life Directions. This is a nonprofit that he started in 1973 with four other concerned Detroit citizens. Father, welcome to Opportunity Detroit.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity.
Will you tell our listeners exactly how you got this started and why in 1973, Father John Phelps?
Good. I started in Southwest Detroit, and I was sent here to try to get to the cause of violence among young people. It was the murder capital of the time, and every 18 hours, someone was being killed under 21. And so I found that one of the dynamics that would happen is that if I get to the dropout from public high schools, that would be a real way to get to the cause. And it took some time. I went into the public schools, and I started basically with four other young adults, a married couple, another minister like myself from Northwest Detroit, and a sister, Rosalie Escara. And the five of us set out to get to the cause of dropouts, the violence, and all the different activities that flow from that, and gangs and everything else. And so it became wonderful. That's how we got started.
Oh, that's so interesting. What was the reaction when you first started doing this from these kids in the community?
Well, when I went into the first public school, the principal thought I was lost and should go back to a Catholic parish at Holy Redeemer. And the other principal wondered if I really should belong in a public school. So it was really a hiccup at the beginning. But when the counselors got to know me and we got to work together, it became really wonderful. The young people started to say, "Why are you here? Just to listen. Well, what do you want to listen to? Your story." And they started to tell me stories, and it became interesting. Because once I got into their storytelling, once they started to share with each other, once those who were making the school work for them and the other ones had a struggle to do that, joined together, the peers began to inspire peers, and all of a sudden, the turnaround rate was unbelievable. And the principal started to say, "Wow, this really works." And I didn't bring anything about faith formation. I brought everything about hope. We wanted to have hope in the public schools and hope in the future of young people's lives. And that's what got it really inspired.
Father, in hearing their stories, what are some of their issues? Why did they get so lost or have so many issues?
Well, They're in a reactive world, and things react. And they play sports, and sports tend to be organized competition. Mm-hmm. But when they don't have any organizational structure, when they're dropping out and they're not connecting with the system as it's running right now in the schools or the parishes or whatever is happening, they begin to fill in the gap with gangs. And they organize each other, and rather than gangs for good, they become gangs for bad. And so the issues they have to face, I'll give you an example. A young lady, she had been in jail six times by 16 years old, and she was thinking that that's the way of life, because that was her family and that was her parish and that was her community that she was working with. And so as she was moving that way, all of a sudden, one of her aunts connected with our program and sent her to us in the school. And then she started to learn from her peers that other people don't go to jail, that maybe there's other ways to doing it. But she was meeting with people she usually wouldn't meet with. And then eventually she really turned around, and she became amazing. And what she said about herself was, the problem I really had was I didn't know I had a problem. But now she's a mother. She has three children. They're finishing college. She started her career. She's in development in Southwest Detroit. So it's a wonderful success story that could have gone the other way.
Oh, it's an amazing success story. You know, Father, as we watch these gangs over the years, we have learned that in an odd sort of way, gangs give these young people, these kids, a sense of community. Not the right sense of community, but a sense of community. Is that something that you've noticed in your work all these years?
Absolutely. It's something like a union that they form together. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a work-related activity. Of course, the work is criminal, and so therefore the activity is not acceptable in our society. But that acceptance, and that's what we want to prevent. Prevention of all of that activity stops it before it starts. If we can stop it before it starts, we've changed a whole population of people. And all of a sudden, the young people who are using gangs for bad, all of a sudden find partnerships and relationships and intergenerational. Parents, adults, their teachers, the system itself, everybody starts to work together for good. And when things are going well, that's the power of their own discovery of what they can do with their lives when they see possibilities.
Absolutely. It's my understanding that Life Directions is a prevention program. Tell our listeners how this works. What does this involve?
We begin in the public school.
Okay.
We ask teachers to give us one young person who will listen to them, which means they're rooted in their values with their family and especially their grandparents. And two of them who are turning the teacher off for whatever reason. Put them together as groups of three, have 15 of them together. We do dramas, role plays, all the issues that they face currently with all their technology and everything else that they communicate with. And the young people start to empower each other to discover possibilities for all the problems that they have, opportunities they could face that could come out of their obstacles. And by being together, they can actually take charge of their lives and begin to build their future. And they start to think, they can dream. And we ask them to think, what are you going to be 20 years from now? So we asked Manny to do that. And when we asked him to do that, he started to think about what he wanted to do with his career. And now he's a manager of a restaurant. And at 13, he was barely making it through school. So this is amazing to see that 20 years later, he actually is living his dream. But we started by having people begin to have a dream about what they want to do. And we asked them also, do you have a dream for your children? What do you want for your children? And that really turns them around.
Speaking of living the dream, some of these young people have gone on to some pretty fabulous schools. Talk about that. Colleges.
Yes, the University of Detroit. We have a graduate from nursing, University of Michigan, someone in science, DePaul University, Harvard University. We have people that have gone into their careers, but the universities and careers together have really shown a lot of avenues, and a lot of young people go that way.
In the 52-plus years that you have done this, how many people do you think you have impacted? How many young lives do you think you've changed, Father John Phelps?
Well, remember, it's a team of five, and it's all the people who support us, our boards and our staff. But together, as a whole team called Life Directions, we have impacted the youth and their families up to about 180,000 people in six different states.
Wow, that's incredible. And do you think a big part of this is just letting people know that you care and that their life is important and that they can make a difference in the world? What is
Yes. It's a lot. When you find your spark is needed for someone else. And when you develop your spark and someone else needs it, and you begin to be appreciated and valued, and someone says thank you for what you're doing, and they're grateful for you investing in their future by going to school and getting ready, and you begin to put those dots together, then you see your neighborhood that you can support your neighborhood and go into your community, and you can clean up the situations there. We can partner with other community-based organizations, and they begin to see that they have all these opportunities before them. And once they see their path to opportunities that relate to their core values, what they really want to do with their life, be it sports or music or education or whatever they want to do, when they can really take that track, then they become a real gift to our community.
We're talking to Father John Phelps. He's the president and CEO of Life Directions. He actually co-founded this incredible organization in 1973. Father Phelps, how can our listeners help you? What do you need?
Well, what we need, like the board, you take the Hathaway family, you take the Ruggiero family. I could keep mentioning the families that have embraced our work. Come with yourself, with your resources, either your family resources, your business community resources, your community-based organization resources. Let's build a network of relationships, because every $1,000 that we raise, like we did at the great gala that we just had down at the Rinsen, every $1,000 is a young person and a family for a whole year. And when we do that, and you do 60 young people, that's the cost of one person being in prison for life. And this eliminates 60 young people going into the judicial system and being part of all the things that will take away their future. But build us, join us together, invest in us. And you can do it by just connecting with me, and be wonderful to be able to respond to you.
And the best way to do that would be through the website, probably, lifedirections.org?
Correct. Or you can call me on our phone, 313-420-0310. Or you can, as you said, go to the website, but also be able to talk to some of our board members. And when we have our meetings and you want to be able to hear more about us, just connect and we'll be able to make the connections.
And Father, I have a feeling that these board members would say that being involved in this organization has changed their lives.
Absolutely. So some people's lives have been changed. They've changed their families. They become aware that the things that their children are receiving are really a gift that a lot of young people don't have. The very things that they take for granted, the young people don't have the opportunities that they have. And when they see this and they bring it to their families and they bring it to their business people, that they can see that when they do construction, but what about what they do with the young people who don't have the opportunity to have a home? When they see that, they see a value added. The banks see the same thing when they do financial literacy for them. They see that we give them opportunities to learn how to be better in their life.
Father John Phelps, president and CEO of Life Directions and the co-founder. You're doing incredible work, and we applaud you, and we thank you for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ann. Appreciate it.
You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Today is Flower Day at Eastern Market. We'll tell you all about it coming up next. Thank you for listening to Opportunity Detroit. Today is a big day in Detroit because it's Flower Day at Eastern Market. And here to tell us all about it is Katie Trudeau, the president and CEO. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit, Katie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I love Flower Day. It's just so pretty. It's so wonderful. It's a great thing for the city of Detroit, for Eastern Market. Tell us about it.
Flower Day is our biggest event of the year. It's also our favorite. We do it in partnership with the Metro Detroit Flower Growers Association. So folks can come down and there are flowers everywhere.
Oh, that's fantastic. And this goes till 5 o'clock today, right?
It does go till 5 o'clock. It's a long day for the flower growers, but it's for many of them their biggest day of the year.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the history of Flower Day. This has been going on for 60 years.
Yeah. Flower Day is a Metro Detroit tradition. Eastern Market has been pleased to be a partner for most of that time. The sheds here down here at the market are really lend themselves well to that beautiful spread of every flower you could imagine on a beautiful May morning.
And good pricing and really nice flowers too, right, Katie Trudeau?
Yes, there is the flowers down here in the market, both on Flower Day as well. We also have flowers every Saturday. We also have Tuesday markets here in May. They're very affordable, very competitive pricing, and just about anything you could imagine, especially on Flower Day. We have the most unique flowers here in the market this morning.
How many different vendors are involved in something like this?
We have several dozens and dozens of vendors. Under the sheds today, and then we have a lot of our favorite food and material good vendors out on the streets. So we've probably got over 100 vendors down here this morning.
Wow, that's just incredible. Now, give our listeners a little bit of advice on how to do Flower Day.
So a few things to keep in mind. One thing we're trying to get out this year is that there are more ways to enter the neighborhood than just Mack Avenue to Russell Street. Mm. There are several other roads off of Mack that will get you into the neighborhood, Ryapel, Orleans Street. When you get off I-75, if you're coming north, head up the service drive and take a left on Wilkins. That's just a way to avoid some of the traffic because it gets pretty busy on every Flower Day, and this morning we're already seeing some traffic backing up on Mack Avenue or on the Mack exit. We also recommend people bring wagons. We have them for rent this morning. You can rent wagons. And the other thing that's just a really fun feature this morning is that we close Russell Street. So there's plenty of food options. There's lots of fun to have for kids. It's just a really wonderful day.
So it's a lot more than just going and buying flowers. It's kind of like a whole big festival, fun family event, right, Katie?
Yes, definitely. It's more of a community experience. It's almost an institution in and of itself, in addition to Eastern Market, the experience of coming down to Flower Day.
You know, what's so interesting to me about Eastern Market, that it's been around and it's been a big force in Detroit's food economy for more than 130 years. Pretty incredible. How are things going at Eastern Market this year, Katie Trudeau?
That's one of my favorite aspects of working here, is that the way people do business, and some of the businesses that we have in the neighborhood have been doing, you know, meat packing and produce wholesaling for the entirety of that time that you just described. So in some cases, 80, 90, 100-year-old businesses. And when you look at it, not much has changed. So it's almost like you're experiencing a little bit of history anytime you come down to the Eastern Market to shop on a Saturday, or patronize one of the restaurants or businesses in the neighborhood.
And you've got over 2 million people that come to Eastern Market each year. That's a big number. That's pretty incredible.
It is, yeah. Eastern Market is one of the city of Detroit's top tourist destinations. We really pride ourselves at being a very welcome and inclusive place for all folks who live in Detroit, in the region, across the state of Michigan, and the Midwest, actually. We get a lot of visitors from the nearby states as well. It's just a wonderful, unique, one-of-a-kind experience to be here at the market.
We're talking to Katie Trudeau. She's the president and CEO of Eastern Market. Katie, I know today's the big day, Flower Day, big-time tradition for the city of Detroit. What else do you have coming up this spring, summer, that you want our listeners to pay special attention to?
Yeah, so I've talked about our Saturday markets, which are our standard every year-round Saturday market, but I think less people know that starting in June, we have Tuesday markets every Tuesday through the end of September. Mm-hmm. And the thing that's really special about Tuesday markets is that we offer free yoga and Zumba classes out of Shed 3. We like to call that our health and wellness market, so you can come down and shop farm fresh produce from Michigan growers, but also if you're interested, you've got Zumba and yoga available for free. And then we also have Sunday markets that start again in June that are a little bit different. They feature material good vendors, artists, t-shirt makers, body care products, things like that. So it's a lovely but different experience.
Katie Trudeau, President and CEO of Eastern Market, I hope you have a great rest of the day today and a wonderful spring and summer. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, Huntington Place was the site of the world's largest autonomy and robotics event. We've got the details right around the corner. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit, and I'm Ann Thomas. Michigan is becoming a leader in advancing uncrewed and robotic systems across air, land, sea, and space. Evidence of this is that Huntington Place was the site of the world's largest autonomy and robotics event. It's called Exponential 2026. John Gutierrez is the executive director of the Michigan Office of Defense and Aerospace Innovation, and he took the time during the event to talk to us. And John, I really appreciate this.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here with you.
John, this is fascinating to me. What is this all about?
That's a great question. So essentially, it's a large international conference. This year it's in Detroit, and we've been working with a sponsor, AUVSI, for some time to bring it to the city and to the state here. And it's all about everything unmanned, uncrewed. So whether they air, land, or sea, all those different components to include supply chains, et cetera, that's all converging right now in the city of Detroit. So it is a very exciting time.
So, John, there's got to be a lot of conversation about drones, correct?
Absolutely. I would say that's the big focus of this whole show, yes.
And can you get into that a little bit, what kind of drones we're talking about and what we will see right here in our own community pretty soon with drones? I know Amazon is already doing drone delivery, so that's one thing we're already seeing. But what else are we going to see with regard to uncrewed systems in the state of Michigan?
Sure. So I think you're already seeing some of these systems today. Some of the technologies are used in some of those commercial vehicles right now that have those, autonomous driving systems where you can take your hands off the wheel, et cetera. So that's probably something tangible that we see right now. I think you're seeing a lot of dual-use applications. On the commercial side, you mentioned Amazon, so package delivery, but also medical supplies. And then as well in the agriculture space, I've seen some drone manufacturers here that are advertising, instead of your traditional crop dusters, et cetera, they could do that with drones. I think the sky's the limit for a lot of these technologies. And then kind of within the Office of Defense and Aerospace Innovation, really looking at some of those military applications within the drone world too. This aligns quite nicely to the recent designation of the National All-Domain Warfighting Center up at Camp Grayling in northern Michigan as the nation's very first Pentagon-designated range for unmanned aerial systems training and testing.
No, it's really pretty incredible. And you are the executive director of the Michigan Office of Defense and Aerospace Innovation. Can you talk about what Michigan is doing to become a leader in this area? I mean, I think back to, the Arsenal of Democracy, for example.
The Arsenal of Democracy is very much alive and breathing. And actually, we launched a strategic plan for Michigan's defense and aerospace sectors with a five-year outlook. And that's exactly what we're calling it, is Reimagine the Arsenal of Democracy. And to your point, so what we really focus on is catalyzing growth within the state's defense and aerospace sectors through the advancement of industrial capacity, innovation, and research. And we're doing this along three very strategic lines of effort. So first, we're fostering business growth. So we're supporting those companies that are building the technology systems and solutions that will create high-paying jobs for Michiganders, as well as protect our American way of life. And then second, we're amplifying the state's unique advantages, and that's from our skilled workforce to our world-class universities to our advanced testing facilities, robust supply chains, and manufacturing infrastructure. Michigan has what it takes to lead in this space, and we want to ensure that government and industry leaders know we have to support in support of new opportunities. And third, we're setting conditions to advance innovation. So what we're doing there is we're creating the partnerships, the platforms, and the policy environment to allow new ideas to both flourish and scale.
So two questions from what you're talking about here, John. First of all, jobs. Are we going to see job growth here in the state of Michigan because of what you are doing right now?
We will see sector growth within the defense and aerospace areas.
Oh, wow.
There are companies that are expanding these areas. I think that is a direct result of defense spending increasing. And it's not only in the United States, but globally. The defense markets are growing exponentially just because of the global security environment right now.
Oh, that's interesting. And also you talk about advancements in innovation. I know we've got Michigan Central and we've got the lab there where there's all these really cool companies doing unique things. Are you taking a look at the city of Detroit as a place where you're going to see advancements in innovation?
Absolutely. We not only the city of Detroit, but statewide, absolutely we do. So kind of to this point, what we're doing is we're expanding Michigan's capacity to accelerate applied research, advance innovation, and create clear pathways for industry to commercialize new technologies. So part of that is what we've been doing is we've been working with, as an example, we're sponsoring or supporting something called the National Security Consortium. This is a statewide alliance of 8 universities currently that are integrating capabilities, coordinating research strengths, and creating a unified point of entry for defense-focused research. And so, you spoke specifically about Detroit. Detroit Mercy, University of Detroit Mercy,
sure,
is one of those 8 universities. So is Lawrence Tech, for example.
That's fantastic. I think it's impressive that Exponential 2026 decided to come to Detroit. You must be pleased with this, too, because this is a very big and important conference that picked this area.
Absolutely. It's exciting. I mean, you can feel the energy within the conference. But I think more importantly, it's the opportunities that, bringing all these business leaders, government leaders, academic leaders together, looking for new opportunities in this sector. I think that unmanned, uncrewed systems are just going to continue to grow as we see more and more applications develop over time. There's probably applications that have not even been thought of at this point in time, but those are certainly coming.
Well, and I too think it's good for students to know that this is available. You know, students who are interested in this area of study, I mean, uncrewed and robotic systems, that's a pretty interesting field that some people may not have even thought about, John.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on there. I mean, I think this is an area that it's going to be a growth sector, absolutely. This coupled with advances in not only autonomous systems, but maybe partnered with artificial intelligence and other pieces there. I think that we're just at the tip of the iceberg as far as a lot of those both dual-use applications.
Absolutely. It's impressive and very interesting. John Gutierrez, Executive Director of the Michigan Office of Defense and Aerospace Innovation, thanks for the time today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
And I'm Ann Thomas. Thank you for listening to Opportunity Detroit. Enjoy the rest of your day.